This week on the Writer's Detective Bureau, Preptober, FBI consultants, and SWAT standoffs. I'm Adam Richardson, and this is the Writer's Detective Bureau. Welcome to episode number 64 of the Writer's Detective Bureau, the podcast dedicated to helping authors and screenwriters write professional quality crime-related fiction. And this week, I'm talking about preparation for NaNoWriMo, the state of the Bureau, creating an FBI consultant as a character, and the role of a hostage negotiator in a SWAT standoff. But before we get into that, as always, I need to thank my Gold Shield patrons, Deborah Dunbar from DeborahDunbar.com, CC Jameson from CCJameson.com, Larry Keaton, Vicky Tharp of VickyTharp.com, Chris Ann, Jimmy Coe of CrimmyBox.com, Larry Darter, and Natalie Borelli of NatalieBorelli.com for their support. Also, my huge thanks to the Coffee Club patrons for their support month after month. You all keep the lights on in the Bureau, and you can find links to all of the writers supporting this episode by going to the show notes at writersdetective.com/64. And to learn about setting up your own Patreon account for your author business, visit writersdetective.com/Patreon, Patreon. So as I record this, we are over halfway through October 2019, or Preptober 2019, if you're planning on participating in NaNoWriMo. I'm sure you've heard of National Novel Writing Month, which is every November, but I'm encouraging you to join hundreds of thousands of other writers this November by signing up at NaNoWriMo.org and going after the goal of writing 50,000 words this November. I know, it sounds daunting. But one of the reasons why I'm suggesting this is because once you sign up, you get access to a ton of support and community, and they have a great Nano Prep 101 section under Writer's Resources. There you will find several weeks worth of writing preparation tools, like developing a story idea, character development, experimenting with a plotting method, exploring your story's setting, and getting your life and schedule organized for writing throughout the month of November. The ultimate goal of NaNoWriMo is for you to write 50,000 words towards a brand new novel in November. So you can plan, plot, pin, and outline in preparation for November 1st, but everyone starts November with 0 words written. I love this idea because it's a reason to start a brand new story, a blank slate, and it will get you set up perfectly for having some writing momentum into the new year. Realistically, after writing through November, you'll probably take the holidays off to let that story marinate. And then January means you'll already have a running start for the Publish My Book New Year's resolution, and the NaNoWriMo word count goal forces you to work on your time management skills. Now, speaking of time management and book publishing, some big changes are happening here at the Bureau. Some of you may know that I hired an assistant earlier this year. His name is Doug, and he's my nephew. He takes care of the podcast episode show notes stuff every single week, and I am so excited to announce that he's going to be soon taking over editing this entire podcast. Now, this is no easy task. The entire process takes a good 4 hours of my time every single week, and that doesn't count the hours that Doug's already handling for me with the show notes. So I am very thankful to have such a hardworking and reliable chap alleviate so much from my plate. That time that Doug is taking on for me is now going to be dedicated to finishing the damn book and keeping up on the APB emails and doing the live stream Q&As for my Gold Shield patrons, which have all fallen by the wayside as I keep plodding through this book edit. So since we're in Preptober and heading soon into NaNoWriMo, I will be doing live streams through the Patreon page. So if you're a Gold Shield patron, expect to see a live stream scheduled posted in the next few days, and that will run from now until the end of November. I want to make sure that you get all the story support you need as you crush NaNoWriMo. Also, expect to see a giant APB email from me tomorrow, which is October 20th, 2019, as I'm recording this, to make up for the APBs missing from your inbox. Now, if you aren't on the mailing list yet, or you don't know what the heck I'm talking about when I say APB, it's the monthly-ish. No, it's the monthly, damn it. APB is the monthly email from me that is full of curated links that I think crime fiction writers like you will find useful. Now, don't worry, it's not a sales page, but it is a portal to numerous research rabbit holes. So only open it when you have time to spare and want to procrastinate. So if you haven't already, you can sign up for the monthly APB emails by going to writersdetective.com/mailing list. And the Bureau has a few more surprises heading your way in the relatively near future. But getting the book wrapped up is my highest priority now that Doug is taking on so much of the podcasting work for me. So thank you so much, Doug. I appreciate you. And I appreciate everyone listening to this. And last but not least, let me know if you'll be attending the 20 Books Vegas conference in November. My good friend Patrick O'Donnell of Cops and Writers book fame invited me to speak on his police procedural panel, and I cannot wait. So if you're attending 20 Books Vegas, come join our unofficial meetup on Tuesday night of the 20 Books Vegas conference in Billy Joe's bar, because I would love to meet you. This week's first question comes from Montgomery Harris, who's a new member of the Writers Detective Facebook group. So welcome to the Bureau, Montgomery, and you can find his work at montgomeryharris.com. And he writes, "Good evening all, and thank you for adding me to the group. The podcasts have been a great resource in my writing, and I was excited to find the group here on Facebook." So just as a quick aside, if you have not found the Facebook group, this is a formal invitation to join us. And you can find us at writersdetectivebureau.com/Facebook. And that will be a link directly to the Facebook group page. So Montgomery goes on to say, "Currently, I'm working on a rather unique detective, a former FBI agent who now owns a collectibles recovery agency called Nerd Filled Things." I love it. "He works as a consultant to Art Crime's Cultural Theft Program as a consultant of memorabilia for insurance companies recovering lost or destroyed property and for auction houses who want to find items for their auctions. Of course, the cases are more thrilling as the series begins. How would an FBI consultant be hired, and what could he and could he not do while working on a case? Thanks in advance." And Montgomery added in a subsequent comment that his protagonist is a retired FBI special agent that retired due to PTSD. So for starters, Montgomery, I'd look at fbijobs.gov/career-paths, and I'll link to that in the show notes. But in particular, look at the STEM section, which is science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. You'll probably notice on that career paths page that there's an arts and communications career path, but that's not the rabbit hole you want to go down because it's not casework. The STEM path, which may seem kind of counterintuitive as it's the left brain science stuff rather than the arts field that your protagonist is the expert in, but stick with me here. By looking at the STEM career paths and their job descriptions, you can get a feel for the civilian job descriptions that involve some aspect of casework. And if you haven't found it already, definitely check out the FBI's Art Theft webpage, which I'll include in the show notes as well. You can find that at writersdetective.com/64. So in real life, consultants to the FBI are contractors. They're not actually employees. And that means that there is a contract length and there are specific requirements to the job they're fulfilling. Also, since your protagonist is already a retiree of the Bureau, and there may be some red tape things with coming back to work after being retired out of a separate job class, because being a special agent would be different than a civilian contractor. But none of that is stuff you should bore your audience with. I would steal the concept of the FBI in real life using contractors and then just finagling it to work with your story and just streamline the process of getting back up to speed at the FBI. I promise a little magic wand waving make-believe is so worth it in anything related to HR in a crime story, because no one wants to read about the trials and tribulations of trying to get hired. As Harry Callahan says in the Dirty Harry movies, only assholes work in personnel. And as a side note, if you ever find yourself in a police department's HR office, look for the Harry was right plaque in one of the background investigators' offices. So that little anecdote tangent is a little inside joke that I'm letting you in on the punchline for. Anyway, getting back to Montgomery's FBI consultant, the limitations would realistically be that your protagonist could not have a conflict of interest case, so the insurance company work and the FBI work should not overlap. But of course, that kind of conflict, both internal and external, is the stuff great stories are made of. So I'm not saying don't include it. I'm just saying recognize it as a potential source of conflict and exploit it as you see fit. I ain't saying, I'm just saying. Lastly, your consultant protagonist doesn't have any special kind of investigative or arrest powers, even though he's a retired special agent. So he's just a regular citizen, which means that as a consultant, your protagonist should do exactly that, consult. I know, there's no fun in that, of course, so your reader is going to expect your protagonist to be right in the thick of it. But as the creator of the story, it's important to know that your protagonist isn't supposed to be there, which only ups the stakes, as any good story should. So I hope this helps Montgomery, and you can find Montgomery's work at montgomeryharris.com. Author L.K. Hill of L.K. Hill writes, "I'm wondering about the hierarchy of the SWAT team. I have a scene where the cops need to storm a part of the city that is dangerous, and they're relatively certain they'll be facing armed people that might fire back at them. So they send in the SWAT team to secure the scene. Are there threshold requirements for sending in the SWAT team? Once inside, they find a man holding a gun to his own head and making demands. He says if they don't give him what he wants, he'll kill himself. Who starts making decisions at that point? The SWAT team leader? Would they pass it off to a detective or some other entity? Is there a title for the leader of the SWAT team? Any info you could supply is greatly appreciated. Thanks for all you do." Great questions, LK. Most SWAT teams have some sort of matrix, so think of it like a scoring system, to determine whether the incident at hand is something worthy of a SWAT response or if it's something that should be handled by patrol. To be honest, I'm not exactly clear on what you mean about storming a part of the city that is dangerous, as we patrol all sorts of dangerous cities and neighborhoods day and night in our patrol cars. It's only when a specific incident is unfolding that we call for SWAT. Now, it's possible that a very dangerous area in a city may have patrol officers that only work in pairs, or wear external body armor, essentially upping their defense posture. But just being in a really rough part of town is our job. Now, let me stop for a second because I want to make sure we're all on the same page. SWAT stands for Special Weapons and Tactics. Not every agency calls their Special Weapons and Tactics team a SWAT team, so check to see what the team is called in the location of where you've set your story. SWAT is certainly the most common term, but you may hear acronyms like SEB or CRT, meaning Special Enforcement Bureau or Crisis Response Team, used in place of SWAT. So to start with, there will be a command post, and this is where the command and control of the SWAT operation will be run for the most part, and there will be an incident commander that is coordinating all of the moving parts. But most of the real decisions are going to be made by the SWAT team members, or operators as they call themselves, as they encounter them. Each element of a SWAT team has a team leader or an element leader. So what do I mean by element? Large jurisdictions may have full-time SWAT teams that may have dozens of team members, and small jurisdictions may only have a dozen team members made up of officers and deputies from throughout the county that only respond when they're called out and are otherwise working their normal assignments like patrol or detectives. But either way, when the SWAT team arrives, they don't all deploy together as one big team. The team may deploy an element as the perimeter team or perimeter element, and a sniper element, and an entry element, meaning a building entry element. Now, I'm not going to go into too much detail as to specific tactics, technology, or the number of operators in each element, but there is a designated leader for each element. They might be the ranking officer, like a sergeant, or they could be the most experienced operator in that element, regardless of their rank. That element leader is the one responsible for designating who does what within the element. Which member of the element will handle the radio traffic? Who's going to be the first one through the door? And for you, LK, the one who will be responsible for making the call when they end up facing your suicidal subject. It's worth noting that many SWAT teams deploy with a hostage negotiation team, or at least one or two members of an HNT, who would ideally be the ones to handle the demands of a suicidal subject in that standoff. So how this scene would likely unfold, LK, is once the entry element made entry into the building and they were in this standoff with the suicidal subject, the police would have a throw phone brought in. And this is a dedicated landline telephone that only goes to the hostage negotiator. It's called a throw phone because, you probably guessed it, it's designed to be thrown into a room, like through a door or a window, for the barricaded subject or suicidal subject to use to talk to the negotiator. So depending on the layout of the building and where the suicidal subject is, the SWAT entry element will want to remain behind cover during all of this, and they may even back out of the building's interior as the negotiator tries to talk the suicidal subject into surrendering. So the one thing the SWAT team won't do is stand there in the middle of the room, potentially exposed to this subject that's armed with a gun. So how the scene unfolds from that point is entirely up to you. So thanks for the questions, LK. You can check out LK's work at lkhill.com. I don't know if you heard, but the folks over at VPN Compare tested the top password managers on the market, and they rated LastPass as their number one password manager. It's time to do something about your passwords. Check out LastPass for free or upgrade to LastPass Premium for $3 a month. Just go to Writers Detective Bureau /LastPass right now to get your password situation totally squared away. Thank you so much for listening this week. Let me know if you're doing NaNoWriMo this year. Tag me on social media and let me know. Let's get your crime fiction story preparation questions answered. Just send them to me by going to writersdetective.com/podcast, and we'll get them answered right here on the podcast. Thanks again for listening. Have a great week and write well.